I think he didn't believe that, and I think that was the first thing he needed to hear, and also to hear that that Raymond was not his business per se.
Yeah.
That's what he's explaining, right? That he was more than the business, and there
Yeah.
were at least of 100 things that he is before his business, and he needed to realize that. Of course, I gave him the time to cry, to feel bad, because he needed that I did understand up to a point, right?
Yeah.
There was a point that, okay, you
3 weeks, just to
did
interrupt. She gave me 3 weeks to cry and feel bad for myself, and then she told me to put on my on your
Kindle account.
Calendly. She put it on your
Yeah.
Calendly. Exactly,
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcast, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new client. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious marketing and management tasks in your agency for less than $15 an hour, fully managed. When you're tired of hiring cheap, unreliable talent, check out ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes monthly.
All right, good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. Today, I have a few of some of my closest friends here in Playa del Carmen. I'm really excited to talk to them. One of them, I've spent a lot of time because talking about Filipino stuff because he's part Filipino. But today I'm going to introduce them to you, and we have a very, very meaningful discussion today about self-esteem and self-confidence. Not everyone identifies as self-confident, and so this conversation, I hope, will give a lot of you guys, a lot of you listeners, insight on what this really means and how it compares to self-esteem. And basically, hopefully, will give you a lot of self-reflection. Sometimes you think of confidence as like the only way to make money or the only way to succeed in life, but that's not, there's no really one path to those things anyway. So some of my two best friends here in Playa del Carmen, they're both entrepreneurs. Over the past 18 years, Ray Blakeney, a Filipino-American entrepreneur, and his wife, Laura Ramirez Blakeney, a Mexican-born language educator, they've built over 20 profitable companies. They've sold four of them and taken multiple to multi-seven-figure successes, including the global language learning platform, LiveLingua. Combining Ray's expertise in launching and scaling high-growth businesses with Laura's mastery of curriculum design and teacher training, they've taught thousands of students worldwide. Their newest venture, onlineschoolbuilders.com, helps experts turn their knowledge into thriving online schools. So good morning and welcome, Ray and Laura. How are you today?
Good. Hey, Carla.
Good. Hi, Carla.
So that you got like a crazy journey building 20 businesses and exiting some of them, selling some of them. I gotta ask you both separately, what is or what was your favorite business among the 20? No judgment.
Laura goes first.
Okay, Laura, you go first.
Well, for me, it's always and was and it's gonna be about teaching. So it's the school. We started a physical school. I think that's for
Wow.
me the one that has been the most personally and professionally challenge, but also passionate about it.
I love it. What about you, Ray?
Yeah, so my answer is not going to be an easy one. I actually am not attached to any of the businesses. I actually just like building things. So, like, which business was the one I found the most meaning in all of them and none of them? Depending on what you want. I jokingly say I would build an online school to train donkeys if I thought it was a good school idea and do it, right? Like,
Right.
it's not, that's not the point. It's the building that's the fun part.
Yes, that's very p politically diplomatic. It's like, which among your kids is your favorite? And you're like, I love them all.
Oh, Aaron's our favorite kid, but it's easy for us to answer that. We only have one, so we don't have to be diplomatic. So,
Exactly.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's funny. And you guys are quite quite the pair. It's like I cannot imagine this going in the same way if you guys didn't have each other. So, tell me a little bit about how you started your first business together, and did that scare you or did that make you excited? Like, what was it like?
I can take the first stab at it. I've told this story before. So when Laura and I, our first business was a brick and mortar language school in Mexico. And when we started it, we had about $2,000 in our bank account. That was to live off of to start our school and market and everything, right? We were so young and ignorant that we didn't know to be scared, I think was kind of the point. We're like, yeah, let's just see what happens and go and launch a business because, obviously I'm a computer programmer and she's a teacher. We obviously should be launching businesses because that has nothing to do with what we actually have done before. So we launched it and I guess we just got lucky. It was profitable within 30 days and we made the first few people paid us enough money to actually furnish our school because we didn't have enough money to actually buy the furniture. And yeah, within 90 days, it was a profitable business and we were off and running. Luckily, our first two businesses worked. So at that time, I was like, wow, this whole business thing's easy. I'd never read a business book in my life. And I was like, why do people even bother studying business? Because, one, it's, yeah, this is really. Then we failed a whole bunch more afterwards. And I started
Of
reading about it. But
course.
at the time, I didn't know any better. So I think that would kind of be the best way to describe it. We were blissfully ignorant with the knowledge that we're blessed that we have loving parents. And we knew we had the skill sets, right? Like, I'm an engineer, she's a teacher. So worst case scenario, it doesn't work. We close it. We move back in with our parents for a month or two and eat some
Find
humble
jobs.
pie. And then we get some jobs. Fine. So like, this was before we had kids and all that. So.
I think that's the fascinating thing about being an entrepreneur. We just live a very different life from people with jobs. And it's funny to say, but also very privileged to say that, you know what, my worst case scenario is getting a job because, especially the economy right now, a lot of people are getting laid off. A lot of people are having trouble making ends meet. And their worst case scenario is very, very different. So, what about you, Laura, as an educator, as a teacher? Have you always thought or wanted to start a business, or you just want to be a teacher?
That's a good question. My passion is teaching, that's for sure. But I had, when I met Raymond and we started the school, probably I already had been teaching for 8 years or so. So for me, having a school was kind of like the next logical step. So because I already had experience, not only teaching, but also the administrative side. So having the school for me was the next one. And he was the technical side. I was the academic side. So I think that's why when he said we believe in what we knew already, and we didn't have a lot of competence, another school against us was not there at all. So I think that's what it also made us be the number one in the city, right?
Because do you remember how a lot of like college professors were like, oh, I'm kind of done with business. I want to go to teaching. Like, even me, like, when I retire from like having to work or like have, like, right now we're working towards our retirement, but when I'm retired from having to work, having to make active income, I want to go back to like teaching. I want to teach. And it seems like two different personalities sometimes, but you guys have both in the same pair in the same business. And I think that is a lot of kind of self-trust, which brings us to our topic today on self-confidence and self-esteem. So I want to start with you, Ray, and your story. So you've shared that you used to have really high self-confidence, but then your business journey revealed some cracks in your self-esteem. Can you take us into that moment? What happened, and how did you realize there was a difference between the two?
The realization is actually relatively new. So, I didn't realize during this journey. I'll put a caveat on there. I still have very high self-confidence. So, that's not a thing. But until recently, I thought self-confidence and self-esteem were almost exactly the same thing, right? If you had asked me, I don't know, even just like 6 months ago, if they were the same, I'd be like, yeah, they're kind of the same. But then one of my mentors, Laura and I's mentors, actually said no. He's like, do you know what the difference is? And he kind of described it to me. And in that moment, it clicked. And the way he described Self-confidence versus self-esteem is self-confidence is the belief you can do anything. And self-esteem is the belief that you don't have to. And once he gave me that, I was sitting there, I'm like, oh, right. Self-esteem means I'm good enough even if I don't. Well, self-confidence is totally based on your actions and what you're doing in the time. And that means it is something very different. And as an entrepreneur, a lot of us have self-confidence because that's why we launch businesses and we believe we can do things. But then we tie our entire self-definition to being that entrepreneur, to being that successful entrepreneur. And all of our self-confidence is based on that image. And if somebody takes that away, then we're just kind of stuck there, like, wait, what am I left with if I'm not a successful entrepreneur? Like, what am I? Like, who am I? Like, am I still worthy of whatever it is you think you're worthy of? And with what happened, well, I guess 2 years ago now, a little under that, like that actually is what I realized, that I had very high self-confidence. I had it before, I have it now again. But it was the self-esteem that I had to work my way through because I was my success in business. Like that's how I defined myself. And scammers and criminals took that away. And suddenly I was like, wait, I'm not that. And it's not good for your mental health.
Oh,
Long
absolutely.
TLDR, not good for your mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah, not a lot of our listeners may know, but to make the long story short, a few years ago, both Ray and Laura had a bad experience with a bad partnership, and it really, drove you guys to kind of like a dark place, right? I remember it was a difficult time for your family. Laura, as Ray's partner, and seeing him go through that, because I know as a wife and as like the woman in the partnership, our hardships are different from the guys, like the man's hardships. How did you support him? How did you build his self-esteem back up? And what were some of the advice or some of the realizations that you were able to make him take as an insight?
I think for me the experience was different only because as a Mexican and the Latino culture, we're very family centered, and women per se were taught to be the ones that have nurtured the family, and doesn't matter if it's your dad, but it's everyone in the family. So when that happens, for me it was very natural to nurture him again. Just to tell him that he was safe, because he was saved, basically. I think he didn't believe that, and I think that was the first thing he needed to hear. And also to hear that he was the that Raymond was not his business per se, is what he's explaining, right? That he was some more than the business, and there were a list of 100 things that he is before his business, and he needed to realize that. Of course, I gave him the time to cry, to feel bad, because he needed that I did understand up to a point, right? There was a point that, okay,
3 weeks,
you
just to
did
interrupt. She gave me 3 weeks to cry and feel bad for myself, and then she told me to put on my
on your
Kindle account.
Calendly. She put it on your Calendly.
Exactly.
Exactly. And also to understand, for him to understand that that was not the end of the world. And the job that you're gonna get is not gonna be the less paid for sure, because all the experience he was bringing to the table. It's more for him. I think that was something I was telling him, and I think that's more for the, I'm gonna say the Mexican way, is we are faithful. We believe in faith, right? Something that for probably Raymond was not the same case. So have faith on himself. It was something that he needed to work, and also faith on the future. They're unknown, right? I think as an entrepreneur, we always wanted to have the control under our wing, and it's not always possible. So let him know that it's okay not to have the control, and if it, what happens, it happens. And I think the most important is to be, in a way, ready for anything that happens, and that happened to us, and that's it. And we were, like you say, we were very privileged. Still, we had a house that we had bought for 7 years before that happened. We have family, we have a newborn. That was something that we fought a lot to have him with us. So we had new other ways to survive. And I said to survive, it was not very survival because we had a lot. But for him was hard to see it. So just to listen, to repeat and repeat, to go out and be in the nature. I think that's also that helped him a lot, right? And be patient. I'm a teacher. It's part of my passion, but also part of my personality probably as well. So that helped me to support him, and also me to have all the women around me, my mom, my sister, et cetera, that I can vent with without having to talk to him about it, right?
I want to highlight something that you said that, you saw that your husband was more than just like a money bringer, a breadwinner to the family, right? You're so many things. Like you're a dad, you're a friend, you're a son, you're a dishwasher. Don't forget that, Ray.
A really good one, eh? I'm telling you.
Thanks a lot.
I'm not insulting my friend, by the way, to our listeners. We have an inside joke
It's my
because
fallback plan. The episode
Ray
on
has a
entrepreneurship doesn't work
secret.
out.
Has a secret, not so secret YouTube called the Zen of Dishwashing. But it's his meditative activity. For me, it's cooking. But I think that conversation is actually very important, Laura, because depression rates and suicide rates in men are pretty high compared to women, right? And it's because the society expects a lot from them in terms of like making money and putting that value to be their only value. A lot of content and media right now about hypergamy, about telling men should provide all the time. If he can't provide, don't date him. Don't do 50-50. Like a lot of these things, like I appreciate some of the messages in a way, but sometimes it also takes it too much that I think some of these messages are so abusive towards men. And so I'm happy that you really share that, and I wanted to highlight that for our listeners especially. So how to you, Ray, like thinking about Laura, your wife, your partner, and when she made you realize about your self-esteem, can you help us understand how you personally experienced that difference? Was there like a particular moment of shift that you remember?
Yeah, so the short answer is like that particular moment, no. It's it is a process. So it isn't just like light bulb goes off and suddenly you realize it, right? Like it was like going from the worst part of the depression kind of to where we were. If you would ask me how long it was, like mentally and emotionally, I would have said years. It was probably 3 or 4 months. But like when you're in it, it was just like there's nothing else going on. And it also made me a lot more empathetic to people who suffer from this in the long term because I'm like, wow, I had to go through 3 months of it and it was the worst time in my life. And, some people just like live with this on a regular basis. A few things that kind of, so the realization of self-confidence versus self-esteem, I had to get to a better place before I was even in a headspace to contemplate that, right? Because the first thing you have to do is trying to kind of get it out. In our case, there were external triggers. For my depression, it wasn't just like spontaneous. It wasn't a physiological thing. There were like external, they haven't gone to jail yet. But alleged criminals, right? I mean, there's a lot of lawsuits against them. So alleged criminals that were causing this whole thing, right? So the first step we had to do was like get out from under it, which is in our case, like get control of the company back, all the rest of it. Laura helped me at least process that because when you're in the middle of it, like everything was so emotional that I couldn't do any processes and she pulled me out. And generally I'm much more of an intellectual, not very an emotional guy. So she had to kind of like, okay, so what are we going to do? And I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And then she'd like put on her teacher. We had actually not whiteboards, those little like, paper post-it notes, but like the big ones, the ones that are like the size. Yeah. One of those
Like
things. Yeah. And
calendars.
we would do flow charts and plans. And she's like, now what are we going to do? And now what are we going to do? And she would write it down. I'm like, oh, we're just going to do this. We're going to do this. Like, I didn't want to at all, right? But like, she's like, pulled it out of me. And eventually I was able to kind of quiet down the emotional side of the mind because my intellectual side was taking over again, which is what you need that kind of helps pull you out of it. So that took a few months until we actually solved the initial stressor. The realization happened, I would even say 6 to 12 months later because, first there's a recovery time afterwards. And then you start thinking about why did that happen? Because now you're looking at it from an outsider and you're looking back and you're looking at it objectively. It's not just, you're not emotional about it anymore. It's like, I don't know, if you were picked on as a kid and you're 40, like you're probably, most of us are not like just hopefully not reliving that, like being picked on as 12-year-old anymore. Like we can look back at it more objectively. And then I met our mentor, whose name's Dr. Bob Wright, and he's the one who actually, I was talking to him a little bit about it. He's like, "Oh, you have the self-confidence, self-esteem problem." And I was like, "Wait, what are you talking about?" And he's the one who actually gave that definition. And I was like,
Wow.
"Oh, that's absolutely it." And so now between us, like I'm, so the dichotomy in Laura and I, and I think we touch on it sometimes, I have very high self-confidence and probably lower self-esteem. She has very high self-esteem and sometimes lower than she needs self-confidence in her experience, right? So that's in that way we balance each other out. But there's like reasons behind it and like how we were grown up and our environments that kind of pushed us in these directions. So I'm working on separating my value more from the business, from entrepreneurship, from what, let's say admiration by peers, all that kind of stuff. I'm trying to
Yeah.
separate my value from that. While she has all of that separated, and she needs to realize that actually has more of that and like more confident in what she needs. And we're both kind of working on that, trying to meet somewhere in the middle.
Right. I love that. Super funny coincidence. Dr. Bob Wright recently became our client. Very smart guy. Very, very smart.
Yeah, I'll call with him tomorrow.
Yeah,
Like,
so such
seriously.
small word when you said Dr.
Yeah.
Bob Wright. Yeah, he also said something to me that also made me think. I'll share that with you later. But I love what you shared about like you guys like as partners trying to balance each other out. I want to quickly discuss both of your insights on one word that you mentioned a few times in your last, in the past few minutes, which was depression. What were the signs for you for depression? How do you know when you're depressed? And I want to get Laura's answer because this moment is very pivotal, but also very different for each person.
You're right. So absolutely right, Carla. And it'd be interesting to hear Laura's perspective because she actually
Yeah.
realized depressed before I did.
Wow, really?
I was not the one who called it depression. Because I had never been depressed before. So like I've never had depression before. I had no idea what was going on. I can tell the symptoms for me, and I've spoken to other people about it, and they do vary
Yeah.
by person, right? So there's not like this is depression. Everybody feels exactly this way, right? For me, the
Yeah.
first signs were I no longer wanted to do things I normally love to do. Like
Yeah.
I teach, Japanese fencing. I love it. I've been doing it for 20 years. I did not want to go and practice. Like barely could get myself out of the to do it. The only reason I did it is I'm the teacher at the school. Like if I don't go, there's no class. If there
Yeah.
wasn't, I would have probably missed it the entire time. I would not have gone. Going to work out. Not that I love it, but it's part of my habit. And I just couldn't get myself to go to the gym in the
Yeah.
morning. Even the worst one, like computer games, which is my release, I didn't even feel like playing computer games. Like I did not want to. And I'm just like, wait,
Yeah.
that's wrong. Like,
Yeah.
what's going on here? So like that was going on, plus sleepless nights. Like to me, that was the thing. I'd wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I'd be up for the rest of the night. Like my mind
Yeah.
wouldn't go off at worst case scenarios. I know now it's called rumination, and it's kind of
Yeah.
thinking worst case scenarios. I had never heard of it before until I was like, what is this? I was like on Google. This was pre-Chat GPT, eh? It was like 2 years ago in ancient times.
Yeah.
So I was like on Google and I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't go to bed. And then I just couldn't find it. I was looking for like medical reasons, like
Right,
that is.
right.
And then Laura was the one who brought it up that you're depressed. You need to go talk to a therapist. So I'll pass it to Laura with that.
Yeah. What about you, Laura? What, or maybe a personal experience also? Do
Yeah, probably.
Mexicans get depressed? Or just cure it with tequila? I'm just kidding.
No, yes, I think so. I think for Mexican, the difference is this, again, is culture. We are used to be with family,
Yes.
and we always have someone to vent with, either a cousin or, a tita, a tito, a grandpa, grandma, someone is around us, even a sister, no, friends that we consider sisters and brothers as well. I think we always surround like that. And I think it's very different from women to men, though, that's for sure. The role is very, it changed. But for me, I think the way I did knew with there, Raymond was because I was also depressed before with our son when he was born. That's a normal thing after you give birth,
Postpartum
right?
depression, yeah.
Postpartum depression. And my mom was the one that pointed out for me the way I was reacting, the way I was acting out things was not normal. So, and that was what Raymond was doing with us. It was different the way he did it because he's a different person. His personality is very different. But that exactly what he's saying. He doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to go to exercise or do things
Right.
that he really enjoy. He look sad all the time and almost to the point to cry. And he didn't want to wake up, like, get up and do things in the morning. And he's a morning person. So those were the things that point me that he was on depression, right?
Yeah, it's really important to kind of like see that from the people that it are very close to us, because like what happened to you guys, like you clocked it before he was able to realize it. For me, when I experienced depression, I think I was far gone actually. But it was when I stood up and I didn't know how to tie my hair. It was a very weird experience. This was when my mom passed away. Of course, I was sad, depressed, crying, but I didn't know that I was truly, truly depressed until I stood up and I looked at my hand, and my wrist had like my scrunchie like this. And I was just looking, and I was like, my brain is like, okay, now tie your hair. And then I couldn't do it. It was a very weird experience. It's like sleep paralysis, but you're awake. And then, my best friend that time, she was living with me. She was staying with me because she knew I'd be depressed, and she knew it would manifest in some way. But that it was, she also knew it would manifest in a very weird way, because I'm generally, just like Ray, a very happy, outgoing person. And growing up Filipino, I kind of had that mix, just like your Mexican like stories, Laura. We have faith, we believe in God. God will take care of us. I have my family, I have my siblings, and so depression could manifest very, very, very differently for different people. So I think the lesson here is, pay more closer attention to your loved ones and talk to them and support them. So many of our listeners right now, even if they're not depressed, they could be like questioning themselves. So for both of you, and I'm gonna start with Laura, what would you both say to the person who feels like they've lost themselves because their business or their life isn't going the way that they hoped?
And for me, it's always to, that's the way I do it, is to talk to another person aloud. The other person doesn't have to give me any answers because I may ask questions, I may not, but I just want to talk aloud. And by doing that, I hear myself saying what I'm thinking. And then most of the time, I will find the answer that I'm looking for, or I will understand what is going on and why I'm thinking in that way, or what is the situation, right? Usually I do this with my mom, and my mom is pretty good at it. She asks questions or follow up with me, etc. But I can do it with anyone. I just need them to hear me out. That I just did it this morning with Raymond because I'm kind of overwhelmed with the school, my son's school. And I needed just to vent, to say it aloud, how I feel, etc. I was not looking for an answer from him. But I was just looking for someone to hear me. And I think that's very important. And I do understand some people, they don't like to do that, to talk to other persons, but probably you can do it by saying that aloud to your phone and hear it yourself. I think it's also important just to put what you have in here outside. It makes you feel better. I don't know.
That's good advice.
No, but sometimes you feel something here. Something is stuck. If you take it out of your system, I think that also helps.
Yeah, I agree. What about you, Ray? What are your thoughts on that?
So, at least for me, because both Laura and I can caveat it, we are not therapists or experts in the topic, right? Just because you've gone through something make you like, don't think we're WebMD, right? Where you work at all the like that. I don't know. I've just we've been through it. The thing that helped me the most was asking for help, honestly.
I remember this
And this
story.
goes more towards the guy side of thing, because especially from before, I was not the guy who asked for help. I was the guy people asked for help from. So like there was a big ego block that I had to get over to start doing that. But you reach out for help, and I was surprised that when I did it first, who and how many people said yes. Sometimes the people you expect to say yes, don't, which is kind of surprising. Some people you like barely know will just go the extra mile for you. That was kind of an interesting epiphany for me. But nobody was like, mad or anything. Like there was, I didn't have any bad experiences. It was just some people's like, I can't, I'm not in the place to do it, whatever is there. And secondly, it also, a lot of people came up to me afterwards, men specifically in this case, and said, yeah, I've been there before too, which is why I've started talking openly about this. As you know, Carl, I've spoken in front of hundreds of people and on stage about this topic now, because it's way more common than we think, like way more common, but there's a social stigma. And I know a lot of your listeners in the Philippines. So like, yeah, I know in the Philippines, it's a big social stigma. If you're depressed, there's something wrong with you, right? Like it's not that you need help. It's like something's wrong with you. And that's absolutely not the case. Like that it's not your fault per se. It's a thing. We're humans, we go through it, and it's the time where we need people to help us. Like we don't need, if everything's going well, that's not the time we need help. Like this is the time we need help. And as a society, as humans, this that should be, instead of you pushing them away and saying there's something wrong with you, is like take them in and listen to them and provide whatever support you can. Like, it's not your job to fix them. One person's not going to fix them. But help them in any little way you can. It's like meet them for a coffee and listen. Like, I think a lot of people help me that way, especially because with Laura, I was just repeating the same like stress over and over and over. Like she can only listen to me complain about the same thing so many times, right? Throughout. The one caveat I'll put in place is you need to have like this friends or this network in place before all of this happens. Because I don't, it's not like you can go and look for friends while it's happening, right? So like prepare for it, build your network, and then you're able to get it.
And to add to that, also like build goodwill with these people first, right? I really believe, obviously I have an advantage. I'm an outgoing extroverted person. It's very easy to me for me to make friendships. Not everything or not everyone will be like a deep friendship that, I can like leave my puppy with them or something. What was that? Two beers and a puppy. Do you know that test? Like you one of the tests that you can see if you could be friends with someone is if you could op out of nowhere share two beers with them, like basically good conversation, or if you could leave your puppy with them. So two beers and a puppy is like a test. But anyway, build goodwill with people around you also, because someday, you might either you will actually save someone's life or you could save your own life because now you have friends that support you. So I really like those pieces of advice. For the people that you guys, you've had all of this experience, the people that you guys are working now, they're all executives, mostly executives, right? And these are what most people would think are high confidence and high self-esteem people. Can you tell us a little bit about how you do business with these people, and what would most people be surprised about learning about the type of clients, the high power like executives that you guys work with?
I'll get started, give Laura a little more time to think. High-powered and quote-unquote successful executives are probably not as different from you as you think. That's the first thing I'll put out there. Like all of the self-doubt, all of the worries that you have, I will 99% guarantee, have exactly the same ones, right? Like it's not like suddenly, woo, I have a CEO on my nameplate on my desk now. Now all my self-doubt and worry disappeared, like it magically disappeared. The biggest difference between I have found with like quote unquote successful leaders and not is their ability to take action on things, right? Because they take action despite the self-doubt and don't let the self-doubt stop them. That is probably the biggest thing that I see in the leaders we work with and the leaders I have a privilege of interacting with as friends and around the world, right? It's, oh, I'm not sure if that's going to work. I'm going to do it anyway and see what happens. While most people's like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not sure. They're going to say, I'm not sure it's going to work. I better not do it. A high-powered executive is like, I'm not sure it's going to work. I'm going to do it anyway. Like that is really the key difference between the two.
I really like that. What about you, Laura? Laura, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think it's mostly what he has said. I think the only thing that I may add is shoot or make it with more details that Raymond said is people have the same doubts that the regular people, that's for sure. And sometimes they need the same amount of people pushing them or guiding
Yes.
them step by step. They are also looking for step by step instructions, that's for sure. There's not like, oh, I got it, and then suddenly they know what to do. No, they're also looking for people to guide them,
Guide them.
right? For sure. So it's not only that they are the people that guides to others, but they also want to be guided. They also want to be supported by other people. I mean, they're just humans like us. They just have more experience probably and knowledge. They have the knowledge. Sometimes they don't know how to put their knowledge outside. So that's why they need these people to guide them, like, okay, this is the information you need, and then we're just gonna organize that, what you think, and then they go and apply, right? But it's the same thing that when you're starting something, they need guides.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So everyone needs guidance. Everyone goes through the same doubts. And the thing that really makes a difference is one, if they take action. And number two is if they're guided by the right people. So let's talk about how you guys brainstorm this business idea. So you have the school, online school builders. I'm going to link your website in the description if any one of you guys want to check this out. If you have a friend who's a CEO, a business owner who wants to turn their knowledge or their expertise into an online school, Ray and Laura has a very, very good support program, mentorship, membership that helps them build and grow their online school in 90 days or less. So this is a very, very good turnover because let me tell you guys, as a fellow educator, a course owner, a coach, and a mentor in the past, my doubts definitely took more than 90 days. Took more than 90 days out of my life. And that wasn't a good experience. How did you guys brainstorm this idea? And what was the aha moment?
Yeah, so it was organic because Laura and I, we were talking about those 20 plus businesses. We built most of them have been like, outside of that chocolate factory based out of Bohol, that was like an offshoot there. But most of them were schools. And people started approaching us and asking us, like, hey, I want to take my knowledge and want to move it online. And a lot of people confused it with, like, oh, I want to get. Start a coach, you want to be a coach or you want to do digital courses. And initially, when Laura and I were brainstorming it, we're like, no, that's not quite right. But we couldn't quite figure out how to describe it because we're like, no, we've never actually built a digital course business. Like, that's not what we teach people how to do. It's also not a coaching business because that's not what we've been doing. So, what is it exactly that we've been doing? And I can't even remember who said it, but somebody at the conference, like, yeah, you guys built schools. And we're like, yes, we do. That's exactly what we do. And I'll describe kind of what the difference is between like a school versus a course business and a coaching business, at least the way that we view it. Course businesses are generally 100% digital. I record videos, you pay $500 to a few thousand dollars, you go through this. If you're lucky, there might be a little like community where you can ask some questions, but generally there's like no teacher that's there other than the person giving the video. So let's call it 100% digital on one end. On the other end is a coaching business, which is I am paying for your time. Carla, I'm paying for you. I'm not paying for your knowledge. I'm actually paying for you because if you gave me another person, I'd be like, no, I'm not paying them. Like, Jane came around and you're like, no, I'm not your coach. It's Jane. And they're like, no, give me my money back. I paid for Carla. Problem with the coaching businesses is they can't scale because it's you're trading time for money, right? Like, it's you and I charge X per hour and you're done. Course businesses used to be amazing, and now there's AI, where knowledge is becoming entirely commoditized. Like, and I'm not surprised if, heck, by the time this podcast goes live, or at the very least 1 or 2 years, we can all go and they're like, give me a full digital course on how to bake the perfect chocolate cake, and like it'll do the videos, it'll do the material and all of it for you, and you hit enter and you're done, right? So you're not gonna be able to sell that, or if you sell it, it's gonna be like $1, $2. So like that business model of digital only is gonna die. So, what is the middle ground between those two things? And we realized that's what we've been doing all this time. Because when you build a school, two things happen. First off, there's still human interaction. But what you're selling is your knowledge, not you, right? So, like it's you can take your experience, you need to using some, Laura's expertise and put it in some kind of cohesive educational curriculum or something like that. Because trust me, as a non-teacher in the beginning, I would just shotgun the information out. I'm like, here you go, figure it out. And I'm like, yeah, that is. Not helping anybody, right? Like they can't figure any of that stuff out. So you have to go and do that, and then you can train other people to pass that knowledge on, because the model we built online school builders around is what we call the CAC factor. And not for you marketers out there with a CAC, it's a different C. It's clarity, accountability, and connection. And the job of a good school is to provide clarity. And clarity is going to be clarity of where you're going, how you're going to get there, and where you are now. So those are the three points of clarity you need to work on. So you're like, where's the student starting? Where do they want to end up? And how are you going to get them there? That's one. Accountability, which means you have to keep them accountability to stay on the path, because we all know this. Like the knowledge example, if I ask most people, how do you lose weight and get fit? Eat less, do exercise. Thank you. You're not going to pay me $1,000 for it, right? But if I was a personal trainer who you're paying like $100 an hour or whatever at the gym waiting for you tomorrow, you're probably going to the gym, right? Like, if you had a cook who was making it for you, they're holding you accountable. So a school's responsibility is to do that. And then the final one is the connection, because you're not actually going to reach any goal you're not connected to somehow. And the connection needs to be to your teacher. Your connection needs to be, if it's in an online school, where your classmates to others, and then connection to the goal. So those are the three connection things that we work on in our online school. So if you don't care about losing weight and getting shape, like all the rest of the stuff, forget about it. Like you're not going to do it. Like don't waste your money. Don't pay anybody. It's not magically going to happen. If you don't like your classmates, you're not going to go to class. If you don't like the teacher, you're not going to go to class. So you need all of those three, the CAC factor and then the subcategories in place in order to build a school. But once you do, now you can scale, because you can teach people how to deliver that stuff. You have the systems in place to do it. It's not digital, because again, you can't really get accountability out of digital. Like, I don't care if I get an email from you with a video saying, you didn't show up today. I know you send that to everybody automatically with an email system. It's like 48 hours. Like, I don't care. But if you're physically going to be there waiting for me on, let's say, an office hour on, part of the classes are hybrid in our schools. So it's partially digital, partially hybrid. And my classmates are going to be there. That's kind of embarrassing, right? If I said I was going to do something for 2 weeks from now in front of six people, and I'm connected to them and I respect them, and I don't do it in 2 weeks, that's really embarrassing. So that's what's going to get you there. So anyway, what we do is we help people take their knowledge and put it into a system where the kind of CAC factor is implemented, and then to help them scale from there. And we've again done it multiple times to multi seven figures in different niches and environments ourselves. And just to kind of clarify here, we have the community, but like we run our own schools still. Right now, Lauren, I have two multi seven figure schools on the side in addition to doing this. It's not like, yeah, we're done. We're not learning anymore. We know it all. We're just going to teach it. We're implementing what we do in online schools.
I really like that because like you basically franchise the knowledge and put a business in a box and built it for them. As an educator, Laura, no names needed to be dropped here, but can you tell us one peculiar kind of unexpected niche or client that you have building their own school? Maybe something for our curiosity.
That we help to build their own school.
Yeah, like something that's a very particular niche, like very kind of like out there. Like, are they teaching people how to I don't know, build duck families or something like that, or make penis candles or something like any like very unique niche or industry that you guys were able to take in your business.
I have one
Right.
thought. If Laura can't think of it, but yeah.
Yeah. If you can.
Okay, it's not quite as creative as anything that Carla would have come up with, because yeah, so far none of those people have come up. Not something I would have thought of, but it is construction vehicle safety.
Wow, that's very niche.
Yeah, I
So
was just like,
did
okay, I know more about like OSHA standards for crane lifters than I ever thought I would ever need. Like, thing? Like, yeah, no, there's a it's a multi it's now it's a almost multi seven. Hopefully this year will be multi seven. Business that just teaches that in the United States.
Or the other one, what was your plant thing?
The
This is
plan.
a woman that what she does is to plan
Oh,
the
landscape
whole
design. That's
landscape
right.
design. And she was talking about, because that was her idea, she was doing for big clients, but also what she wanted to do is for any person that wants to have a nice garden that she can teach them about the seasons, about what kind of plants or fauna or flora are around their place and where to get it, how to do it, how to design their own idea or designing their own garden when it's not a good time in the States, especially in the States to do gardening, but they will be designing and planning. So for summer and when the weather is better, they will start doing it. That was very interesting for me and also for her because she had a lot of passion, love, and experience doing that, and she wanted to pass that information to just regular people because that's what something that
Right.
she really wanted to share with others, but also at the same time not to charge a lot because she felt kind of guilty about it. So that was another
I
thing,
made
and
her charge
that's
more. Spoiler
yeah, he
alert, I did
did
make big prices up quite a bit. Yeah,
exactly.
so.
But that was also very interesting to work with her and all her what she really wanted to do.
Yeah, this is a really good kind of way to support these experts. Because honestly, a lot of these experts are, I personally know a lot of people that are super smart, super experts at what they do, but they can't seem to make the business part of it work. So what do you think, like Ray, for example, what do you think is the what's the problem there? Are they just not like they didn't grow up entrepreneurial or they're not good with numbers? Like what do you think is it?
No, I think that they have the limiting belief that nobody would, that their knowledge doesn't have that much value. And that's really what we come across a lot. And we even have a calculator to kind of figure it out. People are always shocked at what it is. And I mean, it's not rocket science. I'll tell people what it is right now. But basically, your first ICP should be yourself from 10, 20 years ago. Like that's what you should teach them. So let's just say you're 40. Like I am, and you go back to the 20-year-old Ray. Like, what could you teach 20-year-old Ray to get to where 40-year-old Ray is faster, and how much faster could they get there? Do that math in your head. Like, okay, if I went back in time and I told 20-year-old Ray what I knew now, maybe they'd reach there in 10, where I am today in 10 years instead of 20 years, right? And then figure out how much did you make straight out of college? I'm just gonna do easy math, 50,000, right? Let's just say you made 50, and right now you make 100,000. But you could shave off 10 years at a time. How much is your knowledge worth? $500,000. Very simple math. There's more to it than that. But let's just say $500,000. So, in a realistic world, if you had a product you knew was going to work as far as an education, if you could teach your 20-year-old self everything and your 20-year-old self believed because they saw your that you've done it yourself, and you charge them 1% of that, $5,000. And they believe, yeah, if I learn Ray's course, I'm going to make $500,000 more than I would otherwise. How hard do you think it's going to be to sell that product? Probably not very hard. So that's the first ICP we work through people. It's called the 21-year-old self exercise. And you kind of go there and you're like, okay, what would you teach your 20-year-old yourself to get to where you are today faster? And invariably, most people are like, yeah, I could probably get here. I mean, we've heard people say it took me 20 years. I could probably get here in two if I knew everything I knew now. I'm like, well, do your math. Like, it's like $2 million to save and charge for a $20,000 product.
I love that you discussed the money-making part of it, like how they actually sell their first courses and how, oh, I mean, there's their first enrollments. How do you call it?
We usually do it with groups.
Groups.
There's rumor our idea here is for scaling. So we usually make it group classes.
Like
So in a way,
cohorts.
cohort-based, yeah, cohort is, but we usually do more in semesters because we want to, again, it's a school. So we build it like a university. And this thing's the biz cohort. One of the challenges with cohort is it's feast or famine business. Like I teach X, I bring people in, I teach them this in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and they're done. But in a real school, that's not what happens. I'm like, oh, you did part of the part, second part, there's the next part. There's the networking. So there is community part should continue after the actual knowledge transfer takes place. Because if you're doing something for the long term, I don't know. You help somebody lose weight, they reach their goal, but now they have to maintain. So, like, that's where you get the recurring revenue from. I do come from an engineering finance, but I always talk about it this way. But, like, if you believe in your product, like, yeah, I'm going to help you stay healthy for the rest of your life. Yes, there's this upfront investment to do go through the crash course knowledge transfer part of it. But then we have this support you. Like, you went to school, like, you still have friend classmates from college, all the rest of it. Like, but it's our alumni association. We want to think about it. Like, we have an alumni association. You keep it in there and we'll keep you doing there maybe once a year event. Like there are all these things you can build on and building around the school model that's very different from the course model that you can actually have this community of like-minded people who've gone through the same journey as you have. That's a big key for a lot of people, especially today with online, the community is missing from a lot of people's lives as well. So you can
Yeah.
find it. This a school will give you community. It used to be, that's where it was, right? Until college, like community wasn't really a big deal because
Right.
our community was our school. Then we get thrown into the real world and we're like, well, there you go. Have fun.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for a lot of us to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. So since all of this is online, is done online, as someone who has done business online for over a decade, do you help these? One of the things that I really find challenging when I was selling a course, when I was selling mentorship coaching, is having a following, or like who would I sell this to? Who, the people that I know now, they already know I'm doing this. So how do you help your clients get their first few clients?
Well, I guess I'll take this. The marketing side's more mine.
Yeah.
We do an exercise called Outreach 101, and
Huh.
we teach you how to do it. Reach out one-on-one to 101 people in your network is the high level of it. But you don't reach out to them saying, can you buy my product? You reach out to them, ask, do you know anybody who could get, can you give me feedback on my product? And do you know anybody who could buy my product? Because what you just did there is you like amplified it out, because you're not reaching out really now, you're no longer reaching out to 101 people. You're reaching out to 101 people who probably each know 100 people. So you're actually reaching
Right.
out to 1,000 people with 101 emails. It is tedious. We make you do it one-on-one. We make you actually make a video for every single one. It's not like bulk email everybody. No, yeah. Every
Oh
single one, you
my
make a video for
God.
every single person you reach out to. We have a script. They're about 2 or 3 minute videos, but it will probably take you about a month to do it. Because if you think, oh,
Yeah.
2 or 3 minutes, I can do it in a day. Trust me, it's not that easy. Like you need to kind of sit down. You have to kind of
Yeah.
customize parts of each one of the videos.
I
But
guess
we usually get a
also.
30% response rate on those things. Like these are warm re outreaches, and you're making a video. Like Carla, I make a video for you, and I'm like, "Look, hey Carla, how you been doing? You know, how you doing? How's Alex? How's stuff? All that kind of stuff. Hey, I have a new project. I'd love your feedback. And do you know anybody?" And you would start thinking, like, "Yeah, I know Ray. Like, you know, I'd love to help him if I can. At the very least, I'll give you feedback. And if not, I might know somebody who's there." So like that's what we teach in the first phase. That'll get you enough money, and then after that we go into paid ads because that's usually the scale. If you want to scale after that, it's usually paid ads.
No, I like
And
that.
also on the academic part, Carla,
Yeah.
it's a way for them to understand what they're saying, because in the video they had to repeat over and over, and the repetition helped them to say, okay,
Right.
this is my product, this is what I'm selling, this is
Right.
how I'm doing it, what do you think? And then to connect these people in that way, help them to practice and practice and practice up to a point that they know what they're saying, what
Yeah.
they're doing, and they do really believe in what they're doing, especially if it's a new product for them and if it's
Yeah.
the first time, to have that self-confidence, right, is
Yeah.
also part of the exercise.
I like that because I remember when I was coaching people who are new at business, one of the things that was very hard for them was to just make their elevator pitch and just repeat it over and over again. And then I tell them, okay, did you meet these people? How was your elevator pitch? Like, how was your, when someone, when you meet someone at the party, hey Ray, nice to meet you. What do you do? Like they would stutter like even 20 times in. So you guys sharing that you actually make them do this at least 101 times. You check every single one of it. You really provide them that type of Tiger Mom accountability. I
Yeah.
love that. That really works. I haven't seen this approach from any, honestly, any of any coach or anyone who is helping people build online schools and programs like this. So if any one of you listeners are even just slightly curious what Ray and Laura are building, definitely check them out, their website out, and see if you have anyone that can really, really take advantage of the help that they're giving. So obviously, in your program, the most powerful thing that you guys do is to help take these people's knowledge and experience, basically who they already are, and turn it into something new, something profitable, and also helping more people. Can you share how that connects back to their own journey of self-confidence and self-esteem?
Absolutely. Actually, we have a phrase for what you're saying. We call it wisdom to wealth. So we take your
Oh, I
wisdom
love
and turn it
that.
into wealth, right? So, as human beings, I think we're put on this world for two things. One is to grow ourselves, and two is to share, right? So usually the problem is most of us only focus on one of those two aspects, and we always feel like something else is missing. What we try to do with the online school builders is to close the loop. And that's why we work with experienced people. So sorry if you're listening to this and you're straight out of college and you haven't done anything yet, like this is not quite the program for you. Check in 10 years, right? Like, but right now you're not ready for that point yet, right? So go in, get some experience, and then go and give back. You know, it's the concept of taking the elevator to the top and then sending it back down for the other people. It's not taking the elevator to the top and just like, okay, just keeping the door open and nobody else can take the elevator. Send it back down. And you're going to find a different kind of fulfillment. And this is tying into the self-esteem, your self-worth, because it's no longer your business. You're like, yeah, you're going to start getting value and seeing other people succeed. In other, you know, your contribution to society, making the world a slightly better place, because that's what at its core education should be about. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, teaching them how to make, you know, penis candles. Like, hey, somebody
Right.
wants them. You're making the world make really
I'm
good
sure a lot
ones.
of people want them.
Exactly. So like, you're making the world for some people, you're making a better place. Knock yourself out, be proud of it, and give it back. So, like, that's kind of how it's all tied together. Most of the people who come into our course usually have pretty high self-confidence, and this is to kind of help build up their self-esteem.
Oh, I love that. I really love that approach. And for you, Laura, as an educator, obviously you already know the gifts of giving back, of teaching people. What is another thing that these people usually realize at the end after they go through your program with now them as the educator? Do they discover something new about themselves?
Yeah, well, a lot of things new, I guess, they discover. But one is how to trust in other people because, of
Ooh.
course, they're entrepreneurs, so they know and they believe that they can do anything. And sometimes when they can't, they don't like to ask for help because that's the way. So that's one thing that we teach them how to, you can delegate this. This is how you delegate. It's not going to be perfect. That's okay. You can deal with it. Etc. I think that's one thing that I see a lot in almost all of them. One thing that Raymond is not also saying, this kind of courses, we also, he did it and we did it with a bunch of teenagers. They're about to finish high school. And, in order to apply universities, etc., they took one of these courses with us. And I was also very excited to see that even though you may think they don't have any experience and they cannot launch any business, they could. And they have the advantage that we didn't have when we started business, which is AI.
AI.
All the technology that they have on them hands is very, I don't know, excited to see how much they can do. And they're very young. They're 16, 15, 17 years old with a lot of ideas. And when you catch those ideas and they teach them really simple way how to do it, they do it, and they very it's very exciting to see that, especially when they're so young, and to see how much they can accomplish. So it's not only for people that has a lot of experience, but also enough experience for one of them. They wanted to do I don't know, the what was the BX thing, the bicycle, there's a
Oh,
bike.
ATVs, how to ride and maintain an ATV was one of the courses, yeah.
Because
Really?
he had experience. He was
Been doing it for
teaching
years?
others how to do it. So he was working on his course. So that was something that he was going to launch. And people will buy it for sure. I mean, people of their age, right? So that was very interesting to see what people of their age are thinking nowadays. Very different from what we're thinking, we adults, right? So that's something that I always enjoy when I'm guiding people, not only for the young ones, but also the let's say the professional ones, like that passion that they don't know they have until you with them guide them step by step. Like, oh, this is what you know. And that's when they start to realize that, oh, this is what I know is worth it. And I'm really passionate about it. So they find again their passion when they start business and the reason they start a business, right? So that's very, I think for me, fulfilling.
I love that. And I love your guys' journey of paying it forward in terms of self-confidence and self-esteem. Like in the past, you had these experiences, you had these challenges, you got over it, you started multiple businesses. Now you found these people who may have some problems with their self-esteem or self-confidence, help them build online schools. Now they're passing off this confidence to these people who want to learn these skills. So I just love this journey. So I know so many people are now really curious. Like even I am like, oh my gosh, maybe I can talk to Ray and I can start a basic flower arrangement course. But then that's just gonna add
You know,
to.
people are going to pay for that, right? Like,
I
if you're,
know, I know,
yeah,
I know.
absolutely.
Actually, I sent a message to my girl group here, and I'm like, "Hey, do you guys want to do like basic flower arrangement for the house?" And they were like, "Yes, please. When? How much? Like, let's do it." And I'm like, "No, just pay for the flowers. We're just hanging out." Oh, but I know so many people now have these crazy ideas, just like me. How can they find you? How can they follow your work? And what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, the easiest, click on the contact us form there. Or you can kind of sign up. We do have like free workshops that we
Nice.
give periodically. So kind of sign up for the newsletter. One of the cool things we have in Online School Builders, I mentioned the community. We actually have multiple 7 and 8 figure people who built schools in our community, and they give
Wow.
workshops. So like we call them like the senior members. And to join us though, they have to give a course on something that worked for them on their thing. So it's like an actual practical workshop that we include in our
Right.
community. You take our course, which gives you the basics of building your school.
Yeah.
But then we have other people who've done stuff that, yes, we've never done before. We haven't done every possible thing under the moon. So they've done
Right.
it. And yeah, like, hey, this is how I built, I used, I don't know, what was the one? Oh, personal branding. We did one recently on that. It's like, how do you build your own personal brand? I'm like, oh, and we have a full course on how to build a personal brand. We have a full course on how to scale to 9 figures. Like, you know, what are the things, you know, 7 steps to scale to 9 figures once you've got to a certain size. So you can find us in there. You can join us. You can kind of just take some of these free courses that we have as well and test it out. And then if you're like, oh, yeah, it's something I'd like to try, let us know. We'd love to help you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys. This was so fruitful. What a great conversation. And I'm sure that our listeners now have a lot of things to think about. Thank you so much, Ray and Laura, for coming over. And for all of our listeners, definitely check out Online School Builders and follow Ray and Laura also. And check out their newsletter. Keep in touch. Maybe try out some of their free trainings and just see what's out there. And if you know anyone that would really use their help, you could be a blessing to these people. Just make the introduction or send them their website. Everyone will appreciate it. So thank you so much, guys. And to all of our listeners, see you in the next 2 weeks for another episode of None of Your Business. So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have 2 conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.